This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
We hold to these rules of how we want to do things sort of in accordance with how our parents did them, or the opposite in a lot of cases, so we don't want to make the same mistakes. And so we hold on to what we think are values, but they're really more like rules to not do it a certain way. And there is probably a valid value underneath there. But when we get really rigid and fixated in how we display that value, then we sometimes can be creating more work or tension or discord sometimes, or making it harder for ourselves.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast. I'm your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by the delightful Bree Tucker.
Why, hello, hello, everybody. How are you?
We had a lot of fun on today's episode. I specifically liked it because our guest turned around and started asking us reflective questions to like do that little exercise. And it was so enlightening about how much we relate our food, the food we serve our kids, to other values that have nothing to do with what they eat.
Right? Like, it was definitely a therapy thing. It's the whole, like, you're walking in and you think you got stuff figured out, and then someone says, oh, why do you think that way? And then they ask a few questions and you're like, holy crap, this is from my childhood.
It is. It's so interesting, too, how it works out.
Yeah, it was just so interesting to hear her say how, because of the fact that they, you know, you eat dinner or you ate dinner a certain way growing up, how that deeply impacts how you interact with your family as a whole.
Yeah.
On time going forward, and how you made that into a value without even realizing that it is a value necessarily, or where it came from.
It is all so good. We know this episode is going to take a lot of guilt off your plate when it comes to dinner time. It's like, I took a lot of guilt off my plate. Like, oh, haha, off my plate. But
I was going to say, did you get that? You had a little thing off your plate with dinner.
They're always unintentional for me. Like, I never try. And I'm like, oh, but a bum. That's when my kids roll their eyes at me. And they're like, Mom, come on. Like, you're such a millennial. That's now an insult. You're such a millennial, Mom.
Whatever. All your adult friends get it.
It's we true.
Get it. And we think it's funny.
It's true. Hey, before we start in this episode, if you are not getting the No Guilt Mom Weekly, go on over, make sure you sign up and get it. It is motivation in your inbox every Monday morning so you can start your week off really, really great. Go to newsletter.noguiltmom.com and sign up there. Go do it right now. And with that, I want to introduce our guest. Our guest is Erica Jossa. She's the founder and CEO of MomWell, host of the MomWell podcast, and author of Releasing the Motherload. She helps bring maternal mental health to the forefront and supports mothers in their transition to parenthood. And her new book will be releasing on April 9th. And make sure, like, we know this is airing a month before April 9th. Erica has so many great things for pre-ordering her book that's Releasing the Motherload. So go look it up on Amazon. And now, on with the show.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, Erica. I'm so excited to dig into this topic of the mother load, especially like feeding kids, because I'm ready to pull my hair out daily with this issue. So welcome, and I can't wait to chat. You have a book coming out April 9th about the mother load, and I want to know what led you to write this book.
It's interesting, the feeding you're talking about, because we think like formula feeding, breastfeeding, then it's going to end, and then they become like on solids and picky eaters and toddlers all the way through. So I'm sure so many people can relate.
It never ends.
Yeah. It doesn't. It really doesn't.
I'm sure we'll dig into it. So yeah, this book was really kind of like a combination of a lot of the work that I do. I was just a psychotherapist plugging my way through child and family practice and graduated from school, settling into married life and all of that. And then I had three boys in the span of 3.5 years and felt like I was just utterly thrown into the deep end of motherhood. And I found myself struggling with postpartum depression and anxiety, which rocked me for a few reasons. Like, one, I'm a clinician. I literally teach these coping skills for a living. So how come I can't just white knuckle it or pull my way out of this? And two, because I had never heard of maternal mental health as a specialty in all my years of education and all my clinical experience. Didn't even know that this was a high-risk time to be on the lookout for. So I niched down in this area and founded Happy as a Mother, a social media page at the time, just to help support moms in this transition, knowing it's such a high-risk time for so many people. That community really flourished and grew into a podcast, a practice, maternal mental health practice that serves Canada and the US, book deal and all the things, which has been so amazing. But one of the things we've become really known for is our Invisible Load series, because at the time I was one of the first creators to start putting visualizations to these invisible tasks that we carry around with us that we can feel the weight of. They're like an invisible backpack on our back. Like, we know they're there. We feel the weight of them, but we can't quite see them or articulate them or put language to them. So we can't really divide out and share what we can't really articulate ourselves. So when I was approached by my agent and she's like, if you could put one book out in the world, you know, what would it be? And I was like, we can do motherhood differently. Like, I don't need to carry around three invisible backpacks from each of my children and be drowning and resenting my role every day. I can choose something different for myself based on my values, and maybe we'll get into that. And it doesn't have to be this autopilot defaulted into perfectionist role that I'm trying to carry. And that's where the passion stemmed from. And I'm just so excited to finally have it out in the world.
Yeah, it's so aligned with what we do here at No Guilt Mom too, because it's all from going from being reactive to being able to make choices in your life and decide what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And I love that description of you can't really change anything without having the vocabulary to express yourself, because the communication, especially with your partner and spouse in this whole time period, is so important. I mean, when I became a mom, that's when I had to dig deep into my mental health, because I had the postpartum depression with my daughter. That's when I started seeing a therapist for the first time. And it's also when everything just, it changed going through therapy and getting that language and realizing you're not alone in it. I totally identify with everything you just said. And I know Bree's been through it as well.
Yeah. My first pregnancy was a, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting. But just, I was hospitalized for most of it. So that was rough. And then, so then your pregnancy doesn't go the way you expect it. And then all that stuff after. I also have had a lot of moms that I've talked to that had kids during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a whole nother ballgame of frustration. Cause like you talk about how when we had our kids, I'm sorry, and mine are like in their teens now, right? So I had mine in the early 2000s. There was plenty of connection and community available to me. Whether or not I could get to it dealing with my mental health issues, that was a whole nother story. But people that had their kids during the pandemic – that community wasn't even available. It was not there. Their pregnancy, they were barely getting any support. Post baby, mm-hmm. not much there. So, I mean, it's been rough.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I thought for today's topic, we should definitely dig into this feeding of the family and whose job it is to feed the family, because that, as you put it, I feel like it's one of the invisible backpacks that moms put on. In my house, I could start this with a story where we were just sitting around. We went to Froyo last night as a family, and my daughter was like, my son's name is Eric. I can't believe how much Eric gets compared to what I got. You let Eric eat all this junk food, and I didn't get to eat this junk food. I was whole wheat tortilla wraps and whole grain goldfish. And
this is the girl that got gummies that got little
fruit
snacks.
Remember that. She doesn't remember that.
I remember that. Mm-hmm. I was there.
And then she proceeded to tell me how I interrupted her. I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't make you any of those things. She's like, well, I made those lunches myself but that's all that there was, Mom. And she's 15. And it seems like you just can't win as a mom, Erica. Mm-hmm. Even things that you don't do. Yes, she is the firstborn.
See, it's always the firstborn. I'm a firstborn. You always get gypped.
I'm a firstborn.
This is the same that happens with my kids. I hold out until they're this age, and then they all get it at the same time. And so I understand the firstborn struggle. But it's true. These loads carry through all the ages and stages in different ways. And we don't even realize that these patterns have been set up by default so early on. Mm-hmm. And I referenced feeding and nighttime wakings because it really goes back this far in who assumes sort of the nutritional feeding, monitoring of babies' hunger cues, understanding their hunger cues, mm-hmm. all the way through to toddlers and what they will eat and knowing their preferences. And one of the things that this book is really trying to get at the crux of is, how did I become the auto default assumed person to own this entire load?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
When was that conversation? Because I don't remember that memo coming across my desk that I was responsible for feeding the entire family for the rest of my life.
Right. Someone signed my name on this. It was assigned to me, and it wasn't freaking – I didn't co-sign this. There was no – I didn't opt in. I didn't subscribe.
I know, right?
Yeah. And once we realize that, we can question it a little bit, right? We can say, how did this get here? And we become a little bit more curious and unpack what's actually going on there.
Well, it's really interesting that you bring it up, because moms are responsible for the nighttime feedings and stuff. And I've heard this explanation of the whole thing before. It's how much we allow dads, not like moms, how much moms allow dads, how much society allows dads to participate in the early days of their children's lives. Because moms are here, they're given the maternity leave. Dads aren't given the paternity leave. They have most of the food source if they're choosing to nurse, whereas dads don't. And so those first 6 weeks, mom gets into a schedule where she is the sole person doing everything while dad usually goes back to work. And in those 6 weeks, the patterns for the rest of the kid's life gets in place. And because once you have a habit in place, it's so hard to break that habit, so that mom is then responsible for all the child things if you're not consciously aware of what is going on. I mean, have you heard mm-hmm. that one before?
Yeah. And it's interesting because we also talk a lot about role expectations and gender norms in the book. And I describe this filing cabinet that we have, okay? And envision this long ever scrolling cabinet that is filled with every message that we've ever seen or received or heard about motherhood and what it means to be a good mom. We've mm-hmm. got images of our mom maybe making home cooked meals, or I used to bake bread with my grandma in the summers and she baked all her bread from scratch all the time. And all of these things get filed away, and we don't consciously put them there. They're all our life. They're there.
We have all of these images in our filing cabinet of motherhood.
All of them. And it's like a junk drawer.
It's like a junk drawer.
It becomes so full.
And I want to hear exactly what we do with these images right after this. Hey, all, it is Joanne.
And Bree here.
And we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode, and all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples, because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Okay, these images in our junk drawer that we don't even know are there, Erica, what happens with them?
Well, I don't know if you've had a mail drawer or like a drawer you've seen, and it's just like every single thing, every school form, everything gets like crammed in there. And we think about trying to organize now and understand what we want to be, who we want to be as good moms, you know, like what we're going to measure our performance by. And we go rummaging through this drawer, sort of frantically pulling at all these things that we've seen, trying to kind of like pinpoint and act out or find the thing that makes us a good mom. But there's conflicting messages in there. There are things that don't align with our values in there. There are external expectations that we don't even agree with that we've observed in there. And so until we do a real inventory of these expectations that we've internalized and kind of shred the things that no longer fit with our value system, we are just being pulled in a million different directions, trying to please everyone, society, mother-in-law, mom, partner, all the gender norms and pressures. We're going in a million different directions. And we just simply can't win doing that. It's unrealistic.
Yeah, it's totally unrealistic. And until you know that that junk drawer exists and that's what you're trying to do, it's very, very hard. I had this explained to me by a friend for the values because, and she hit it right there. One of the values out there is thrift. And you get into this mind space that, you know, you should be trying to do things as cheap as possible because you want to be thrifty and you want to use your available resources and everything. But have you ever stopped to consider if one of your values isn't thrift? And it's okay if one of your values isn't thrift, because that was like when she told me that, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I am here trying to find the best deals everywhere, feeling pressured, feeling like this is what I have to do to be a quote unquote good mom.
Right.
But it's not making me happy, and it doesn't have to be this way. So like you said, I think examining your values is so important to realizing like what you need to do. And in terms of feeding kids and feeding the family, you have an exercise in your book about what does food mean to you. Can you take us through that and what you recommend moms do?
Yeah, I think it's really important for us to realize that we have a lot of things that we feel are important to us to be a good mom. And maybe there is a true value underneath there. But the how we represent that value and the how we act it out, there's a wide range of different ways to do that. So when we really think about what we want to achieve in the load of feeding the household, understanding what food represents and means to us is so important, because it's really not just nutrition to fuel our bodies, we'll see. It has so much more to do with what we think food represents. So I'll go through just a few questions to reflect and ask yourself to really understand what food means to you. So what memories come up when you think about mealtimes as a child?
You know what memories come up? My parents had a TV in the kitchen, and we would just put the TV on and we wouldn't talk around the table, and we would be watching the television the entire time. And my sister and I, my sister's 7 years younger than I am, but we talk about this all the time, and we've banned TVs at our tables because of that.
See, it's interesting, because the value there that you've adopted is almost like presence or being together, because you didn't like the way it was done when you were younger, right?
It's
interesting, because the value of presence in itself doesn't have to be associated with dinner time. It's great if it is a couple times a week and whatever. But I know that sometimes my children are just way too wound up and wiggly. We got neurodivergent kids and they're bouncing off the walls. And it actually makes for a ragey mom sometimes. And so other ways to also think about expanding that value and incorporating it that don't just mean, you know, no TV at dinner. Maybe there's pizza movie night or whatever. I'm sure there is flexibility in there.
I see how that goes, though. But like, it's how examining that value might be contributing to like a harder time as a mom, because I do that, Erica. I'm at the table and I see everyone watching TV, and immediately those feelings of guilt come up, and I'm like, one's connecting. I'm not doing my job. But just giving a little grace and a little self-compassion for that. I love it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We hold to these rules or vows that we make of how we want to do things sort of in accordance with how our parents did them, or the opposite in a lot of cases, that we don't want to make the same mistakes. And so we hold on to what we think are values, but they're really more like rules, vows to not do it a certain way. And there is probably a valid value underneath there. But when we get really sort of rigid and fixated in how we display that value, then we sometimes can be creating more work or tension or, you know, kind of discord sometimes, or making it harder for ourselves. And one of the skills that we talk about in the book is choosing the path of ease as like a form of self-care. You know, like if we want to prioritize presence and everyone's overstimulated, nobody's listening and they're bouncing off the walls and I just want to give them tablet while they eat so that we can all decompress, then how do I bring presence in after that moment has passed, right? I'll do a couple more questions here. So what were the rules around food in your home growing up?
We had the, you know, you have to eat everything that's on your plate for sure. And that was one that I took in with my kids and definitely learned was not worth the fight.
Right.
And then also I think the messages too of growing up in the 80s of like having to eat everything on your plate. There are kids that are starving in Africa. And also thrift was a big thing in my family. So then it was also you're wasting money. We spent money on that food and all of that. So then you learned, or now we know that we learned to ignore our body's messages of I'm full. And food became something that it just became something different entirely. So bringing that in with my kids when they were little, it took me a while to figure out that, I got to stop doing that. That's not good.
I had a lot of guilt around food because my mom was constantly dieting. I mean, it was a whole Weight Watchers thing. And like my dad was always trying to lose weight and go to the gym. And so there were certain bad foods and there were certain good foods, but they would never eat the good foods. It would always be the bad food. So it'd be eat bad food, consumed with guilt, must do better tomorrow. Eat bad food again, still consumed with guilt, must do. And I took a lot of that into my adulthood before I realized what was going on.
And I share in the book about how it actually represented a time when my parents split and divorced. We went from having like home-cooked meals and more of like cohesive family times to a lot of pre-made freezer meals or TV dinners and things because of the shift in my parents' capacity, because of the shift in finances. So to me, it represented a time that was like unstable or unsafe. And so then you kind of flip to, oh, well, the opposite of that, safety and security, then is home cooked meals around the table. But that is not at all what actually builds safety and security. Exactly. So that value is so important to me. Dependability, reliability, safety, security are like priorities for me with the kids. But that has nothing to do with whether they eat their dinner or not, or whether I give them pizza or waffles or whatever.
We attach so much emotion to food based on other things. And I'm really interested to hear your next question right after this.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Okay, so let's hear another question that you have, Erica, to ask yourself about what food means to you. Because I love these. These are like digging into like subconscious level attitudes kind of things.
Yeah, we've never really thought about our relationship with food. Usually we're triaging tantrums and poop blowouts and all the things. There's two questions. Maybe they go hand in hand, and we can leave it at this. But what does it mean when someone cooks you a meal? And or what are you trying to express when you cook a meal for others?
Oh, I feel like this is loaded. Yeah.
Like to me, cooking a meal for everybody is an act of service.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, I am not a good cook. The fire alarm goes off a lot in my house.
I have had to loan Bria an air purifier multiple times.
We have fans located near our doors so that we can open up everything to get the smoke out. But I digress. When I do manage to not burn a meal, it is because I'm like, to me, that is showing my love for my family. So even though we all know that, like you just said, nobody's going to go through life and be like, I know I was loved because my mom made me food. Like, no.
Right. Like, there's an element of like thoughtfulness, or there's an element of, you know, that act of service, as you said. But if that is the value, then there's so many ways. There are so many. There's little notes in a lunchbox. There's little things that are not cooked from scratch, homemade, labor intensive, time intensive. There is this real myth, and we address it in the book. Like, I tackle it head on, where we think the more time, the more energy, the more investment, the more we sacrifice ourselves and martyr ourselves, the better off it is for our children. That's some bullshit. I'm sorry. Yep. It's just not 100% true. And then we are depleted. We're burning out ourselves. And then we're not happy. Like, we're resenting our role. That doesn't really make me want to be present if I'm resenting carrying this load by myself every single day. So when we understand that being a good mom does not equal being the one that carries the household feeding system all on our own, then we can say, wait a minute, what is involved in this load? And who else is owning some of these pieces? Who owns prep? Who owns making sure the list is up to date? And I have this conversation with my boys all the time where, like,
mommy is not the default for any household or child work in our home. You can do it for yourself. Your dad can do it. We have equal ownership and responsibility to each other in the home to make sure we're contributing. And obviously, as adults, we have to make sure the food is cooked for them. But my partner and I share that, and no one person is defaulted into it. It's not how it started, though, let me tell you.
It has to be a conscious effort. That's how it goes in my house too. Like, my husband is in charge of grocery shopping. I sometimes help with the meal planning if I feel like I want to cook that week. But I mean, lately, like, we're in the middle of a big work project here, and I have not been meal planning. And so Sunday he went to Trader Joe's and he's like, okay, I picked this up for a meal. I picked this up for a meal. I picked this up for a meal. And they're all really easy, mix it together and heat, because that's his preferred method of cooking. Like, make it hot. And that's all it is. And it's so nice and simple. But yeah, it didn't start that way. It started with Rachel Ray magazine and me thinking I had to make those 30-minute meals that actually took an hour and a half.
The level of perfectionism that we carry into that, right? I have to make sure that it's a balanced meal, that it is, I don't know, low sugar, low whatever. Okay, I'm going to spend my whole weekend batch cooking these freezer meals so that it's all nutritious. And like, the perfectionism that gets woven into doing this right, quote unquote, when my husband took over that load and he didn't carry that same perfectionism into it, I was like, what the frick? How can he just like put some spaghetti and meatballs on and keep it moving and not be obsessing about why they're how if there's a veggie or not, you know?
Right.
But it's just never been the messaging to him that he has to do that, that it's expected of him, that it's not so synonymous with his role. It's very much about function and practicality and making sure that the kids are fed and get what they need. So I was had a hard time reining in that perfectionism about what I thought the meal planning should be when he took it over, but also was so freed from not having to be in that constant place of couponing. And was this, do we save enough, or do we do all the million things, you know? Yep. It's really freeing. Yeah. To step out of it.
Well, I love everything that is in your new book, and I'm so excited for it to get in the hands of people. And when this episode airs, you are in pre-launch for it, and you have some bonuses along with pre-order. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So we have a digital companion guide to pair with the book that is worksheets and additional exercises to help be that added guide going throughout, because it's not really like workbook style, the book, the way that it's formatted. So there's an additional guide. They get free access to my division of labor course. And it's kind of put in the context of returning back to work, but it's all like, how do we not lay patterns and get stuck in them? Or if we are in them already, how do we break out of them? Mm-hmm. And it's like a 7-8 lesson course that they get access to for free for being early adopters and sort of pre-sale purchasers.
That's awesome.
And then everyone gets entered into a giveaway chance to win $250 from Smash Test. I don't know if you know. Rompers and all the different clothes, very trendy and fun. So entered to win a cash prize to kind of treat themselves as well. So yeah, that goes up until launch on April 9th.
That's exciting. Awesome. So how can people get the bonuses?
So they would upload proof of purchase at ericajossa.com. And then they would get an email with all the codes and all the things that they need there. So if they're thinking about purchasing or purchasing for a friend for Mother's Day or whatever the situation, do it ahead of time. Claim those bonuses for yourself, because the course alone is a $50 USD bonus thrown in there for free. So
that is awesome. And it is like everything that you talk about is so aligned with what we have here at No Guilt Mom. I am so excited for more moms to hear this message of not carrying, as you say, all the invisible backpacks. So Erica, it's been wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's been so great. Thank you so much.
Something you might not have been able to tell from this episode is, even though like Bree and I really liked Erica a lot, both of us were nursing killer headaches all throughout the day. Like, usually we record this after Bree and we couldn't.
Yeah. Like, it was one of those things where like, even at the very end, I'm just thinking to myself, don't throw up, don't throw up, don't throw up, don't throw up. You can make it, don't throw up.
And Erica was so good. She was so, so good. It's one of those, we always stay on after we finish recording and we talk to the guest. And I wish we could have gotten to talk to Erica a lot longer than we did. We did a bit, but we're both kind of like holding our heads together. Must have been the air or the weather or something like
that. I'm telling you, there was something in the air. Like there is something in Phoenix whenever it gets warm suddenly, like right now for people that are... We're recording this at the very end of February, and it was 81 degrees yesterday. And man, when stuff goes into bloom, my head's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm going to leave you in bed so you can't enjoy any of this for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just work through it slowly.
I love, like, spring is my favorite season ever. I feel so energetic in spring. I think it's just because I'm not freezing. Like, I'm not doing my Arizona freezing thing anymore.
Yeah.
I know people on the East Coast are like, Joanne, you have no idea what freezing is. And it's true. I don't. I'll give you that.
And we acknowledge that.
We acknowledge it. Yeah. But like, it's just so much more energy and like the weather's great and like everything is happening and it's so wonderful. And my daughter was like, spring's not my favorite season, Mom. It's my least favorite. I like fall and winter.
Oh, well, because she's a Christmas girl. She really likes to celebrate Christmas. Does. She's like me. She's a pumpkin spice gal. She likes her pumpkin spice. Like, I would say, as much as I love the spring, and I do, I love the spring. I love the flowers in bloom and all the green. I'm definitely a fall girl, too. And you know, a big part of it? I am so allergic to orange trees, which there's a ton here in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah, there
that,
are.
Like, if I even go to somebody's house that has an orange tree, I can't breathe. So that's I'm true. All like, spring's like, only so-so for me. My sinuses make it kind of a downer.
Oh, so. You need some like good allergy meds in there.
I do. Oh, girl, I double up in the spring and it's still like it's I'll be best. Outside talking to somebody. I sound like one of those like scenes from a movie where somebody ate shellfish when they weren't supposed to.
Oh, no.
You got orange trees nearby? My throat is swelling shut. I can't breathe.
It's crazy. Oh, that reminds me of something that happened at my son's school. So he, his friends have some allergies, like his group of four people he likes to eat lunch with. They have a nut allergy and they have a shellfish allergy. And one day at lunch, the school, and I don't know why a school cafeteria would do this, with like all the allergies in the world, like peanuts and shellfish being the most common. It was Thai shrimp bowls. Out of a school cafeteria
for elementary school kids.
For elementary. This is a public school. I have no idea what they're doing. I would be honestly very afraid to eat these Thai shrimp bowls. I admire their courage. But it was Thai shrimp bowls. And like his friend actually had to go home because she thought she felt her throat closing up. Like she had eaten some shrimp or eaten something, even though like she fully knows she has a shellfish allergy and has to stay away. But it's so intense, the allergies, is that if there is something that is for lunch that day, he cannot get lunch that day because he would not be able to eat with his friends. Like if there's peanuts in the lunch that day, so he like looks at his school menu. I mean, he's a fifth grader. He brings it up. He looks at the school menu every morning and he's like, can I eat lunch at school today or do I have to bring one? Because yeah, so I thought it was really interesting. But I was like, decisions, school.
That is.
Shrimp bowls. Like, interesting.
Like I applaud the effort. That is an A+ on effort. And I like the creativity.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're exposing kids to different flavors and tastes. That I love it. I would love for my kids to eat Thai shrimp bowls. But that's because they're not allergic.
To peanuts or shrimp. Yeah.
Right. As someone who ran a preschool system, it's kind of hard. Like the younger the kids are, like kindergartners, understanding that 100%. No, no.
That would be hard. That would be really hard. But I thought it was.
I remember one time we had a kid that ate like we had eggs for breakfast one day and he ate eggs and then he started to have an allergic reaction and he called his parents and we're like, hey, he says his throat is itching. That's as much as it was. We were wondering if you could like come and pick him up because we're fearful he might have had an allergic reaction. Like, are you aware if he has any reactions to eggs? And they're like, oh yeah, he's allergic to eggs. And we're like, could you put that on his form? And they're like, oh, you guys serve eggs? I just didn't think you'd ever serve eggs. And the kid, when we're like, why did you eat the eggs if you know you can't eat eggs? He's like, because my mom never lets me. And we're like, oh God.
Oh yeah. That's like a friend of my daughter's. I was like, I doubt her mom is letting her come over to our house anymore because of that. But they were, they have this cookie crawl. I think I've told you this before, the cookie crawl that is in our neighborhood. And so it was actually your daughter was over at the same time when it happened. And they had the little peanut butter Hershey Kisses, and this girl is allergic to peanuts. And she's like, oh, I've never seen this cookie before. I think I'll try it. Like,
oh my knowing God.
How she's allergic to peanuts, and this is a peanut butter chocolate chip cookie. Yeah, she had to go to the emergency room. And I mean, this is not a little kid. This is like a ninth grader.
High schooler.
So yeah. They do it. They do it.
Yeah. So it's interesting. But yeah, but we digress. So so we hope that you really loved this episode with Erica. And so like right there at the end of our interview, she shared all of her goodies that she has going on with her pre-order. Just go to her website. Oh, I'm going to butcher Erica's last name.
Jossa.
There you go. ericajossa.com. And you can put in your info, your proof of purchase, and she will be sending you out some goodies on that. Got a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Get the link in the show notes because Jossa is spelled D-J-O-S-S-A. So just to be aware so you don't go someplace and you're like, oh, they sent us to the wrong place. No, which unexpected.
Which is why I was worried I would butcher it. I'm not great at that. But hey, if you loved this episode, share a little bit of that love. Rate and review us. Could you please? Like, we love that. We love getting to hear back from all of our listeners what you thought of our episodes. What was awesome about it? What would you like to see? What would you like to hear? And plus, you know, when you share the love, it shares it with others. It helps like our podcast reach more moms, which our goal is to make sure that every mom out there knows that she's not alone.
Exactly.
We're all there with you.
Exactly. So remember, the best mom is a happy mom. Take care of you, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.